Blog Talk Radio.
Get like half a Bud Light.
All right. Listening to The Unknown Show, I'm Bud Smith. I have a bunch of guests on the show tonight. I talked to photographer Ben Zank, author Amber Spark, poet William Stewart Bonney, activist and scientist Dan LeGuin, and author Gary Powell. Well, thanks for listening. We, as I said, we got a lot of guests tonight. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and that's about as high as I can count. So, waiting to see the first caller all in here. No one just yet. Just wanted to take a little time to talk about what's going on in the big old world of Uno Kudo submissions are open right now. Redders out there. Looking for everybody to send their stuff to unokudo@gmail.com. Send whatever you got. And it gets paired up with fantastic artwork by Uno Kudo's art director, Aaron McFarland. Otherwise, I've been working a lot lately, so my personal life's been shot to hell. But I can't complain too much. Right now, I've been reading a new book of poetry about to come out from Red Paint Hill Press, and the book is called Windsock Etiquette, and it's by Zach Fischel. And I gotta say, it's pretty goddamn good. It's about to come out, or it might have just came out, March 15th. I see on their website they still have it there as a pre-order. So, yeah, take a look for that. And, well, Jesus Christ, you got a missing guest here to start off the show. This is fun. Uno momento, por favor.
Yeah.
All right. Well, technical difficulties. We're going to see if we can catch up with Ben Zank a little later on. But on the line right now, we have Sandin Seguin. Sandin, am I saying your name right?
Yeah. Yeah.
No shit. I got it on the first try?
Yeah, Sandin, yeah.
That makes me, the last name, Seguin?
Seguin, but there's a lot of different ways people say it. It's French-Canadian, and mostly we've been in America a long time, so...
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm notorious for fucking up everyone's name. It excites me that I got a kind of close. That's great. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
So where are you calling from now? Like, Washington or something?
Yeah. I'm actually in Bellevue, on campus at Bellevue College, where my job is. So, yeah, Washington State, where it's not even raining right this second. So, lovely.
I know. I was just in Washington a couple weeks ago, and it didn't rain once when I was there. Well, it rained when I was leaving. I was getting on the train, and everyone was telling me how lucky I was to avoid the rain. So I felt good about that.
Good. You took a train over here?
No, it was like I was taking the light rail in Seattle to the airport.
Oh, right.
Can you imagine that? Like, I keep seeing there's this thing going on right now with Amtrak trains where everybody's got this hype going, writers going about the Amtrak writers residency. Have you seen anything about that?
Yeah. Well, just a little bit, but I mean, it seems magical.
People post about that, and they're all excited about riding a train for a week and riding on a train, and I'm just thinking to myself, have you guys ever ridden on a train for more than a day? you know, any idea how horrible that is? That, you know, I worked with this guy who took a train from New Jersey to Florida, and by the time he took the train down there and then took the train home, by the time he came home, he looked about 25 years older.
I
don't recommend that. Anyway, so I was very intrigued to talk to you. Aaron Dietz pointed me in your direction. He said that you were interesting. And I think he's on to something with finding interesting people. Like I said, I was just in Seattle, and all his friends out there are like, filmmakers and doing this crazy shit. And you lived in Alaska for a while, didn't you? Tell me about that, first of all.
Okay, yeah, sure. Yeah. I grew up in Alaska, in Juneau, Alaska, which... didn't seem weird until I moved away from Alaska, and then everybody's like, what do you mean you didn't have a road? What do you mean you got late to school because there was a bear? What do you mean? And so I grew up in Juneau, Alaska, and I thought that was like, that's a big city, right? It's the capital. We've got 30,000 people. Okay, people come to Juneau from nearby communities because we have like McDonald's and a Costco even, so like, yeah, pretty civilized stuff we're talking about. and then I went to college at Western Washington University, which is in Bellingham, Washington. It's a lovely community. I enjoyed it a lot. But that is, like, nobody even thinks of that as, like, a city even. It's like a, you know, a town.
It's twice the population
of Juneau.
Is it like a metropolis compared to Juneau? Or what?
Well, yeah. There's just so much more of everything. Everything, there was more than one of them. And then even if the thing in Bellingham you didn't like, you could go to another community.
I knew a girl from Alaska. I went to school with a girl who just showed up in New Jersey from Juneau. She lived in Juneau. And her name was Maria, and she was she was Inuit, right? Like an Eskimo origin, Eskimo descent, whatnot. And I tell you what, I'm being totally serious. I know I fuck around a lot and joke around, but she could beat everyone in arm wrestling. That was like her thing. She showed up and she's like, let's arm wrestle. And we were like, this is like third or fourth grade. Everyone's like, oh, all right. And like, it never occurred to us, you know, like to just, well, yeah, we're all going to arm wrestle. But this girl showed up, and she, nobody could beat her, even Bobby Beard. Bobby Beard was like 5'9", 5'10" in like the third grade. You know, he could he could slam dunk. But yeah, so that's when I think of Alaska, I think of her.
That's a good visual. That's fair. Sure. Yeah.
And now the story doesn't end there. You're interesting not just because you live in Alaska, because there's apparently, according to your statistics, there's over 30,000 people that live in Alaska. So I mean, you know, you're not unique. There's potentially 30,000
other
interesting
people out there.
No,
frankly, not that special. That's right.
But you're doing some really cool shit with science, which science is very popular right now. Everybody pretends to like it. Neil Dyson, what's his name?
Neil deGrasse Tyson, he's got a TV show and stuff.
I'm not sure if that's how you say his name, but it's something like that. And he's got this show, and everyone loves science. Tell me a little bit about what you're doing, what you have done with your crazy, crazy science stuff.
Yeah, sure. So I am working with a community lab called Hive Bio here in Seattle, and we're just kind of a group of kids that got together and thought, I mean, there's some really great stories, I think, about how we got founded, and I'll kind of come back around to those, but the idea is that we believe that people should have access to science and that you don't really know things until you've done them yourself. So we're kind of part of the maker movement in that regard, that we, you know, you don't really own something until you can take it apart and really get it. So we got really kind of kickstarted by two really fantastic ladies. The first was a 16-year-old girl who did a really fantastic science fair project and decided she wanted to continue that research, and she was going to have to, like, go into a lab and do this work. And she couldn't find anybody who would let her as a 16-year-old into a lab, which, you know, is in part because of liability, but has a lot to do with just sort of, like, you just don't let kids in the lab. It's just, people don't go for that.
Yeah, it's like Bud
Smith's
house. You don't let kids there, you know?
Yeah. There just is an understanding that's not going to work out well for anybody. Except that it's not. I think it's the best way to get, you know, youth, young people, kids, whatever age group, interested in science, is to let them do it. She, after having harassed dozens, maybe even hundreds of scientists here locally, realized, like, well, if I want to do this, I'm going to have to build my own lab space. And in the process of kind of, okay, well, I'm going to build a lab space, I guess that's what you have to do, she ran across our other co-founder, who's a single mom who, her background is in graphic design, but she was working at the Allen Institute for Brain Science, learning about sort of creating the graphics of research about brains, which actually in and of itself is a very cool job. She realized she wanted to know more about brains and that kind of experimental stuff that was happening all around her, and there's this very definite barrier of people who can do science and people who cannot do science, and it just seems unfair. So they both kind of independently came to this conclusion that, like, Seattle is the kind of place that needs a lab that the community can get into, that it should be accessible to people who, you know, are not apparently the right age or not apparently the right education or not apparently the right, you know, financial background to just have their own lab. And so from that, they've gathered heaps of enthusiasm, lots of resources, and we threw open our doors in October, and I run the education programs there. Yeah.
Well, that's awesome.
It's pretty wild.
What kind of crazy experiments and stuff have you seen that you wouldn't expect just a random person off the street to just come in and do?
So one of our first ones, and really exciting one actually, was one of the guys who got involved early on as like a software tester. So he's not a biologist, and he thinks about computers all day and has this sort of like pet interest in biology. And he had learned about, you know, in some New York Times article or something, about there's this gene that apparently makes you more likely to take risks. And I want to know if I have that gene. And so he designed a test and tested himself for it. And that's exactly the kind of thing we want to facilitate, where people are like, well, I have this question, and I want to know the answer, and the easiest way will just be for me to figure out how to do it, and then, you know, I'll do it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The thing is, I'm not a scientist, but if you want my scientific opinion, if somebody has a job in a cubicle working on computers all day, they don't have the genetic gene to push them towards risk-taking, I wouldn't think. So.
you wouldn't think, I suppose.
No, but I bet he does, though. I bet that guy does. It's beautiful. It's so beautiful to hear about people. It's like you said, you know, people who normally wouldn't have access, just jumping in there and mixing it up, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, and we've been really pleased at how responsive sort of everyone has been, because it can feel at times like there's this undercurrent of it's kind of us versus them, like it's the makers versus the establishment. And so far we've really found that it's not that hard to sort of approach a scientist and say, look, we think that the public in general is more interested in your research, and we would like you to come and talk to just some people about it. Can you do that? And people are really like, oh my gosh, yeah, me? Yeah. Oh my goodness, I would love to share this thing that I obsessed over for years and years. I would love to try and talk to some new people about that.
believe me, I understand exactly what you're talking about, because even with this rinky-dink little radio show thing I do here, I'll approach somebody whose work I really like, and maybe I haven't talked to them before, and if I say, hey, you should come on the show and tell people about your stuff, they go, the general response is, really? Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
I'm like, you never thought to do this before? Like, to talk about your work? People love to talk about their work. Rightfully so. That's, you know, share your stuff with the world. But you're really sharing. You're really oversharing and doing some other wonderful stuff. I got really intrigued about you, because Aaron was saying that you've got some kind of goal to raise a crazy amount of money for charities and fundraising. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. So part of the reason that I'm involved in this whole science thing is because I got a PhD in molecular biology, and there's something about doing, like, I was looking for drugs that would help cure disease that's common in immunosuppressed patients, and like that feels like really important work. And
well,
it
when
feels
you said
like
I'm looking for drugs, that sounded a lot like me, and then it changed. The rest of the sentence was different, but so.
We almost had something in common there.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think we got a lot in common here. I'm coming out there. I'm coming into the lab. So keep going.
Awesome. Good. Okay. So, you know, working toward, you know, I did Alzheimer's research in college. I did research on these this disease. It's really a problem for HIV patients, AIDS patients in graduate school. And that sort of feels like this is important, and I'm throwing all of my passion into something that's going to make an impact in the world. And then I graduated, and I was like, oh, man, science is hard. And you know what? I really love thinking about how people learn. So I'm a curriculum writer now. Which is awesome for me. I love the career path. But then I realized, like, well, you could argue that this is work that other people could do. Like, there's something about doing this kind of weird one-off molecular biology research that's like, not everyone in the world can do this. And this is in part about the access and privilege in education.
Yeah.
But the fact is, not everyone can do it. And whereas, you know, figuring out the best way to write a biology course is something that, frankly, other people have thought about before, and it hadn't been that long that I got out of school, and I started thinking, like, well, how am I going to fulfill this need I have to do something good in the world? And I turned 30 last year, in the last year, and I thought, you know, that's kind of a milestone thing. I should do something kind of milestone-y, and there's no reason I shouldn't just do something kind of crazy. And I had this idea that, like, well, maybe if it's really crazy, people will help me. And that turned out to be right. Like, I just have this crazy idea, and everybody's like, that's so hard. You can't do that on your own. Oh, honey, I'm going to help. So anyway, my goal was, I'm going to raise $30,000 for charity, various charities, either through money or donating my time. And I am, 80% of the way there. And I've gotten a lot of really great support from my friends and family in doing this. And it's been a lot of fun. It's been a good excuse to explore different kind of charitable ventures and different ways to get involved in the notion of charity. It's been really cool.
I think the idea of charity is the more you give, the more you have to give. It's strange, you know. I think about charity a lot because I listen to NPR, and every couple of months they come on with that annoying fucking fund drive thing where they've been trying to sell me this hand crank radio thing for years. Apparently, you know, just I can crank it and it's like a really shitty little transistor radio. I can bring it to the beach and everything. But one day I will donate. I will donate to them because I do listen to them a lot. But so now you're engaging people, and you feel like you're rallying up the troops a little bit, huh? Is that kind of a fair assessment?
A little bit. So the whole process has been kind of, I don't mean to say like enlightening, but it's been very revealing. I think about my own personal process. I was like, I'm going to have this crazy idea. And I'm like, yeah, it'll be awesome. And when I try and explain it to people, it often is like, wait, you're raising $30,000 for which charity? Any charity I feel like, or you feel like, we can all do different ones. How do you even keep track of that? I have a spreadsheet. That doesn't make any sense. And you're volunteering hours, that also is not like a thing that's a dollar value. I just assigned a dollar value because I felt like it. So
I think it's great.
Thank you.
You know what I think? It's great. It's great because it lacks that thing that people don't like to get. The thing that people want to get involved in usually involves fun. Now, if you're telling me an idea and my reaction to your idea is, that's crazy. By me saying that's crazy, it also means that's fun. So so what the fuck, right? That's crazy that's fun. They're hand in hand. So what's the so what else is going on? I want to hear a little bit more about how this has affected your personal life. How helping others has helped you realize shit about yourself.
Well, one of the things I have learned about myself is I don't like organizing stuff, and that probably is apparent from the way I described the whole project. So a good friend of mine was like, oh, this is a very cool thing you're doing. You know, we should have like a fundraiser type event, right? Like, we'll, you know, pick a charity or several that we want to support, and then we'll like have an event. We could do a pub crawl, and this could be, and like pub crawls are not superhuman efforts to organize, even, you know, especially if you set your...
Yeah. If I went on a pub crawl for a fundraiser, at the end of the fundraiser, I'd be, like, laying there dead in an alley and all my fundraising money would be gone, you know?
So, you know, we're sort of, like, trying to talk through this, and I just realized, like, I'm not ever really going to be able to tell that many people what to do, especially...
Yeah.
In a bar type scenario, that's not going to happen.
Oh my god!
So So even though the vague impression was like, oh yeah, maybe I'll like organize some big events and there'll be a few things and that'll sort of like kick us through the year, I very quickly was like, no, that's not where the numbers are coming from.
Well, I tell you what, I'm inspired. I really am. Usually I'm a miserable fuck. I don't get involved in anything, but you've inspired me. I'm going to get involved. I'm going to make a little lab in my apartment. I'm going to start cooking down, you know, prescription drugs. I'm going to start making some crazy shit here. It's going to be great.
For science. Great.
For science. Well, hey, it's very refreshing to talk to you. I talk to a lot of writers on the show, and it's fantastic to talk to you about this badass science stuff. Keep it going. Keep the kids involved, all right?
Thanks for your time.
Thanks for your time.
Yeah. It's been a pleasure.
All right.
Appreciate it.
Be good out there, okay?
You too. Bye.
Well, that was that. Oh, man, Jesus. Rick Girl's got a lot of energy. I hope, I don't convey the same energy field. Next on the show, Amber Sparks. Amber, are you there?
I am.
Oh, nice. How's it going?
It's great. I am sitting in my office, actually, and it's dark outside, and I don't have a lot of energy either. That's probably terrible, right?
Well, no, that's not terrible. I think Sandin is honestly first time I've ever communicated with Sandin, and I want to leech off some of that energy and positive thinking, because I'm like you, I'm just a negative. I'm just like you, Em. I'm a negative, miserable, East Coast piece of shit. You know what I'm saying? It's just horrible.
I mean, I'm from the Midwest, but yeah, I've been out here way too long, so it's all the negative has filtered in. I've absorbed it.
So for everybody listening, I can hear crickets, all eight of you listening, Amber is a fantastic writer. I'm not just saying that. She actually sent me a bio. Let me see. I'm gonna read some of it to people listening, because I owe this. Facebook tells me I'm unable to fetch previous messages in this conversation. So that's your bio, Amber. That's your new bio.
sounds about right, actually.
Oh well. Where are you from in the Midwest?
That's a complicated question. All over. Minnesota, Wisconsin, Iowa, Nebraska.
Mm-hmm. And you made your way to Washington, D.C., and you're in the parking office right now.
I am. Well, there is a light on in my actual office, but it's dark outside.
Yeah.
So
I get in trouble all the time for sitting in, like, a dark room. You know, like, I'll just be like, I don't know, like the sun's kind of going down, I'm reading a book or something, and I just, like, I got a lamp right next to me, but I don't turn it on, and I just keep, like, squinting more and more and more. And then my wife walks in, and, why the hell are you reading a book in the dark? Like, I'm like a...
I'm a yeller, like, also. I do that, too.
Yeah.
I can't stand it.
Yeah, I'm like a complete serial killer, you know. And stop reading that book in the dark. Don't kill your whole family, please. All right, no problem. I'll turn the light on. So
it is creepy.
Yeah, it's creepy. So what's the move? What are you working on right now? What are you writing right now?
Right now I'm working on a story about serial killers in the Wild West, the Old West.
Yeah.
It's actually based on a true story of a family that bludgeoned people to death and stole their money and was hunted down by a posse. I just finished my novel, actually. That's, like, the big thing that I've been working on for a long time. So now I feel so free. People keep asking me what I'm working on. I'm like, nothing.
Yeah.
But I really am, but it doesn't feel like I'm working on anything compared to that. So.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean, because it's like, you know, you have these projects and you're just like continuously just beating into these projects, and then all of a sudden one finishes and you're like, holy shit, well, what the hell do I do now? So your newest book, I believe it's your newest book, and like I said, my information is always misconstrued, wrong. The Desert Places.
That's the newest.
Would that be considered? Well, holy shit! I'm like 2 for 15 so far on the show. That's good. That's pretty good. Tell me a little bit about the Desert Places.
So Desert Places is a hybrid novel or a hybrid text, which basically means that there's pictures and text. And it was a project that Robert Kloss and I, my friend Rob, and I actually wrote together, just sort of for fun, really. Decided that we'd, you know, submit it and try to turn it into something cool, a real book. And Rob actually knows Matt Kish, who is a fantastic illustrator. And he kindly agreed to do the illustrations in this book for us. The illustrations really make the book. I mean, not to downplay what we did, but, I mean, they're amazing. And there are, I want to say, like 15 of them. We asked him to do, like, a couple of illustrations, and he ended up doing an illustration for every piece in the book. So
yeah.
It really is, I can't even imagine what the book would look like now if the illustrations weren't there. It's really... People always ask if they were all sort of written and drawn simultaneously, and no, but it almost feels like they were. So, and the book is, I guess I should say what it's about. It's about,
We don't give too much away.
And death.
Yeah,
and not to be morbid, but yeah, it's basically a history of evil. In the universe,
nice.
From, you know, the beginning of the universe to the end of the universe. So.
The cover of the book reminds me a tiny bit of Evil Dead, the book, the Necronomicon, the Book of the Dead. it's like, are you familiar with how that looks? It's like a...
Okay,
all right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh,
if not, it looks a little bit like your book, so there you go. So that's that.
Well, that's awesome.
So also, your debut short story collection, May We Shed These Human Bodies. What's going on with May We Shed These Human Bodies? Are you...
It's a book. It came
Tell
out a
more.
Couple of years ago. So it lives and breathes, and well, no, it doesn't actually. But
it's weird. It's weird when a book comes out. You know, like okay, so how many years old is May We Shed These Human Bodies? Really, how many
I
years
guess,
old?
Not quite two. It'll be 2 in October of this year.
Yeah. And even something that's 2 years old to the author, not particularly to anyone else, but to the author. Like, for instance, if, like, I'm talking to somebody and they just read Slaughterhouse-5 and it was new to them and they loved it or they hated it, whatever, it's like it was this brand-new monumental thing to them. And they're like, so it doesn't matter. It was like when I was 13 years old and I discovered my dad's Led Zeppelin albums, and I bought one at a flea market, and I said to my dad, I love this band Led Zeppelin, you got to check out this song, and he's just like, go to your room and shut the fuck up, you know. I was bored with them in 1983, and it's just go away. But that happens with books. So the author puts this book out.
Yeah.
You put this book out 2 years ago, and it just seems like it's just this thing I did.
I mean, don't get me wrong, I love it. I'm very proud of it. Still, you know, I'm not distancing myself from it. It's great. Yeah, it is a funny thing, though, because it's like you move on to the next project and then the next one, and you just don't really, it's not that I don't think about the book or love it or appreciate it or whatever, but somebody will say, like, oh, I just read this story and I love it so much, and I'm like, oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's
great. I haven't thought about that in a while. It was the first book I ever had published, and and Curbside Splendor published it and did an amazing job, and I obviously think it's great, so I wouldn't have submitted it for publication, so.
Yeah, and the other bizarre thing, too, is, like, when somebody stumbles upon, like their starting point with your writing, let's say, is not... the Desert Places, and it's something older, and it's like maybe they picked up this book somewhere, maybe you said you human bodies, and God forbid you get an email about it or something. Someone said, hey, I read this, and, you know, I enjoyed it. And it almost like, is there like a tinge of like, well, wait a second, I'm doing all this goddamn promotion for my new one. You didn't see that? How come, am I wasting my time? You know, whatever.
Okay. Well, and it's always like, it's also like the whole thing of, you know, obviously when you're writing, and people don't necessarily understand this, but you're like, no, I'm better now. Like,
then
I still think the book is good, but at the same time, you're like, no, like, I have better stuff now. Like, read this better stuff that I have, so. It is, because you're always getting better, or you hope you are.
Well, trust me, though, Pearl Jam thinks that, too, and they've sucked for... 18 years or so we got to be careful.
Great.
We don't we don't get like Pearl Jam. I got a friend with a Pearl Jam tattoo. He still pretends like he loves them.
Oh,
that's the crazy. That's the crazy thing.
Why you never get a band tattoo? I mean, unless they've passed the test of time long ago.
I'd get a band tattoo if I was like Bob Dylan. I would have like a Bob Dylan tattoo if I was like, you know. Of course, I wouldn't say Bud Smith. I was just like my own band. I could never depend on bandmates. They ruin everything.
Yeah. No, that's a bad idea.
So, are you doing readings or anything anytime soon?
No, actually. We did a tour for a short tour for Desert Places. I guess I've been doing things every now and then, but I don't think I have anything coming up like in the near future. I'm in this sort of break right now. It's really nice. I'm, you know, watching The Wire. Like, that's what I'm doing with my life.
Is that any good?
So, it's amazing. I thought I was the only person in the world who hadn't seen it, so.
No, people, you know, I'm bad at that stuff. People tell me, you know, to watch these shows. I remember a couple of years ago, me and my wife watched Twin Peaks. And we were like, this is great. Yeah, we don't even talk for like, you know, 23 years or whatever. But that just keeps going. You're probably going to flinch when I say this. We're about ready to start watching The Sopranos. So that's our
I've never seen it. I don't know. I basically didn't trust TV for like ever. And then, you know, I suddenly have started to actually listen to people's recommendations, which is weird. So now I guess I'm just going to keep taking them.
I guess that's not a bad thing. Just, you know, and then when someone gives you a bad recommendation, you got to remember, you know, seek your evil revenge, right? That's the only way to do it.
I'll just write them into a book.
Yeah. Kill them on like the third or fourth page. So,
exactly.
All right. Well, I want to thank you for coming on and tell me about this great stuff you got going on, which sounds really nice, just like enjoying some TV rather than, just this constant battle of new shit, right? There's enough new shit.
Yeah. The new shit will come. It'll come around again soon. So, but people should definitely check out the Desert Places because it's probably one. I think actually it was, you know, BuzzFeed and a couple other places named it one of the best books of last year or one of the most gorgeous books of last year. So if for no other reason than to hold it in your hands, it's a pretty gorgeous book.
Yeah, I see that. I do so much research for this show. My research is like I look at people's website while they're on the air. May We Shed These Human Bodies got a couple really nice write-ups to Atlantic Wire, Publishers Weekly, and Flavor Wire. So that's cool. All right. Well, Amber, I want to say goodbye to you, and I want to thank you again for coming on the show.
Yeah, of course. Thank you for having me on.
Keep it real, all right?
All right.
All right. So, all right, well, that was Amber Sparks. She's got a lot of cool stuff going on, too. I think I'm the only person without cool stuff going on tonight. I'm just sitting here with a headache. What the fuck do I do about that? I got a caller on the line here. I unfortunately don't know who it is from the switchboard number, 817-480-5451. Does that ring a bell? Are you there?
That's Dr. William Stewart Bonney, Bud Smith.
Oh, hey, Andrew, William Stewart Bonney. How are you doing over there, man? What's going on?
I'm doing great, man. Just landed a little bit ago. Just stopped by my work and grabbed a check.
Head back
to my house.
You have a small prop plane you fly around, right? That's what you mean?
No, I took my lovely cover designer for my latest book flew me out to Tejas.
I'm on Google. I'm on Google trying to figure out what Tejas is. That's like how do you spell that?
Tejas is Southern Texas. That's Austin, San Marvelous areas. It's a beautiful part of the country, bud.
Well,
wonderful, wonderful place.
some of my favorite people are from Texas, which seems counterintuitive because I don't really like the parts of Texas I've been in. I just think I haven't gone to Texas with good people, you know? I think
you
that's
know,
the problem.
Have you been going to Houston or Dallas?
No, I've been to the places that, you know, are cool. I've just been there either with people who are also not from there. Something happens when you go to any great city and you're there with someone who's local, especially somebody who's local and doesn't have to go to work and all that stuff, and they can just take you all around. That's a whole other one. Yeah.
Or like me, I mean, Austin is like it's my second home, especially since my parents. Like, I grew up in Dallas-Fort Worth area, just to give a brief history to our lovely listeners out there. And then my parents, they're both ministers. They're ministers out in the country now, out in Brownwood, which the next biggest city is Abilene. It's about 3-5 hours from anything major. So, Austin, whenever I go home, is pretty much, that's my home, my second home, my home away from home here in Denver. And, I have some really wonderful friends out there who have some run some really amazing companies. Got to stay with my friends who run this company called Collab and Art, and for the South by Southwest, which is why I was down there helping them out.
Yeah.
I think they put on like 6 or 7 separate shows and events, something like that. I think I was involved in 3 of them. One of that being like Local Gold, which was a lot of my favorite Austin bands, like Mother Falcon and the Hikes, who are just wonderful bands if you guys can check them out. Fucking just destroyed it. It was like 60 bands and like 3 stages, and I don't know, they Collab and Art, all my friends, they made like a bunch of like mushrooms and candy, like giant candy.
Uh-huh.
So it was like a Willy Wonka theme. they worked with our friends Fox and Quarterly, who's another amazing printing publication out of Austin, and then Raw Paw, who is probably one of my favorite things that exists right now. You like music, literature, art, all in one cohesive thing. That is, you got to check out Raw Paw. And then also Vagabond Collective and, like I said, Collab and Art. So it was just one of those crazy, it's just been crazy.
That's awesome. And you're right on the tail here of the release of your poetry book Studies, which is fantastic. Were you able to do any readings or anything out there?
We had initially set up a reading at that Local Gold show. But we got a sponsorship from Tito's. We had some friends who got a sponsorship from Tito's as a vodka in Austin. Uh-huh. And they just premiered a new cognac. And let me preface this story with another story. So I'm flying out and I've got these free ticket vouchers because, like I said, I got flown into Austin because of my lovely friend Austin.
Uh-huh.
And I flew from Denver as it started snowing to Chicago and had a layover in Chicago Midway, which was great. I had like 3 or 4 beers, some whiskey, I was flying pretty high. But in Chicago there's a storm coming, so they're like, listen, The flight you were going to take is completely booked now because everybody's trying to get out before the storm hits. You're going to have to spend the night, and there's a good chance you might be stranded here for a couple of days. And I was like, well, that's not going to happen. So what can happen? And they're like, well, would you like to fly to Fort Lauderdale and spend the night in Fort Lauderdale? And I was like, I haven't had any beach time yet this year. So I was like, let's do it. Go to Fort Lauderdale. Went to Fort Lauderdale for about 4 or 5 hours, wandered around, really, really nice. Camped out in the in the airport for about an hour, and then I got right back on the plane, flew to Houston, had to muddle around Houston for a bit, and then finally got to Austin. And then, as I was being picked up, I was luckily complimented with a greetings marijuana bowl and some beer. So it's like 10:30 in the morning, and I'm already I'm sky high, and we're setting up this show. And they're like, as we're starting to set up the show, they're like, all right, here's the free keg. And then came the free Tito's and the free cognac. And it's just, bud, I don't know if you've ever mixed that much alcohol together. It's a recipe for success.
I've never overindulged. I'm a very pious man, you know. I tell you what, that actually puts me in a pretty good spot right here, because you didn't get to go reading out there, and I'm wondering if I can force you at gunpoint. I'm holding a gun to the phone right now. Can I force you at gunpoint to read some stuff now?
Yeah, absolutely. I just happen to have one last copy with me, so I've got it. It was like already out because I gave it to my friend Joshua, who runs Earl Apparel, who picked me up from the airport like a dear friend. Thank you, Joshua. And we're gonna read. This is probably my favorite one. This is all of these are on also my blog, Cheeseburger Nebula. And that's actually how they started and how it became a book. Shout out to you, bud. Thank you. And Unknown Press. And this show.
Unknown Press.
So, number 91. People keep saying, you got a thing for words. Truth is, I've got a thing for girls. Swirls of marijuana smoke and stars hung above skyscrapers like Audrey Hepburn's pearls. People think I've got a ring for her. Truth is, I've got rings around the world. Intellectual sparring matches like I was never absent from an arsenal of words. Fine furs and California king-size beds where she twirls my beard hair in her fingers. All profits go directly to the chopping board, so from the kings to the pawns, we all break bread.
Nice.
I think that's my favorite. And let's see. These are all very, very short. And
brevity is the key to life.
Yeah, brevity and timing are the two keys to life, kids. So, this one is 94. I think I'm just gonna say the last 10 are my favorite in the entire book, but that's just my cynicism.
Yes.
If I could transcribe a moment to you, this would be it. All my heart at the tip of this pen. I've looked for you since inception. I see everything I love about you, or I love about the world in your smile. I was like a child, delicate and forgotten, inept in winter's grip. Your moon rays warm my skin. If everything had finished in that instant, your presence cemented on my very existence. In the rawest thoughtlessness, I've proceeded on since, guided only by the spirit and the wind. These sentences mean everything. It is my natural state. So please forgive me for the way my voice shakes.
More.
I am a simple man. I'm reminded of that day to day. In the strangest of ways it tames me, even though this lion may. There is little shame. I pray your soul hears what mine is saying. My days are numbered here in these states. And your not coming would be my only mistake. So I'll wait. Patience is a virtue. And life without you just wouldn't be the same.
What kind of other malevolence did you get into recently? Your person is always on the verge of getting into some kind of fun. So,
so my dad was a Catholic priest back in the 70s, studying at the Vatican under Pope John Paul II. He decided to move back to North Texas to set up a Catholic renewal center. Which then he left the Catholic churchhood and kind of traveled around for a little bit, did his own thing. But the woman he started with kept that place going for years and years and years. I used to spend every Thanksgiving there from childhood until I was like probably 19, just every Thanksgiving. One of the families there, one of my dad's oldest friends, his daughter and son are two of my oldest friends. And they live in a place in Brooklyn called Club Casa. And it's just a really, really, really cool music collective. And now becoming like just kind of an art and cultural collective. They just got written up in the New York Times, and from their Times article, they decided a road trip down to South by Southwest, rent a house, throw a few shows, which they decided to work with my friend's company, Collabinart. So it was just one of those beautiful moments in time, you know, where all the stars kind of aligned. And it was, there was a couple of venue changes just because of how crazy Austin was, but that worked in our favor. We have our friend down off of 2nd in Guadalupe and in Austin who runs this really, really amazing contemporary and street art gallery. And we got to set up and have some amazing R&B performances one day and have some just incredible hip-hop performances the next day from just, like, acts that I could name them off right now, but, like, in a couple years I feel like you would actually know who they were, you know, like this guy named Isaiah Rashad who just got signed to a label with a couple of TDE with, like, Kendrick Lamar, if you've ever heard of any of them, out of L.A. Just a lot of really, really talented hip-hop artists. And it was just really amazing to see them in, like, a really, really, like, close private venue that was run by a friend, you know, and it was all, like, friend company. So it was just one of those really beautiful, beautiful things that happened that I didn't know that was really going down, you know, whenever I went down to South by Southwest. You know, I wasn't expecting to be able to work with, like, one of my best friends from high school in, of like, a decade, and then two of my oldest friends, you know, my entire life. So it's just kind of on cloud nine right now, you know. And also,
Are you one of those people that believes in, happenstance, is, like, predestined,
you know,
or?
I believe that, you know, you output what you input, you know, and you input what you output. Like, there's a lot of, you know, if you're positive and just trying to work all the time for the betterment of everything, like, that should be enough, you know, I guess. I don't know, like, just kind of that golden ratio of, like, doing unto others what you would have do to you, you know, like, not really any Christian undertone, but just, like, trying to be a good person, I guess, like. And I feel like once that happens and once you make that, like, conscious change to, like, kind of be happy and try to be nicer than maybe you are actually as a person, which is how I feel it is, like, good things happen, and, you know, like, sometimes you slip up and you're an asshole, but, like, that's just life, and you learn from it. So I felt like, you know, it wasn't my perfect trip. You know, my perfect trip would be me and, like, a limousine with, like, a jacuzzi limousine that was, like, flying through the sky, you know, that had free cheeseburgers and, like, went to another universe and stuff. But, like, that's not going to happen. So I gotta really tame back, you know, some of those dreams.
You did pretty well considering
you didn't
get,
I appreciate that.
You didn't get to fly on Valcor or whatever and save the never-ending kingdom.
Valcor would have been an incredible entrance. That would have been just the best to fly in on to South by Southwest. And also, so, South by Southwest was a very different festival than it ever has been. It's very a lot bigger than it. I mean, it's always been big, but this is like Pitbull played this year. And Coldplay, and that was weird. I don't know. I just want to say that's weird. So,
now, when my Coldplay comes and does like their big show, what's the big venue there that Coldplay plays at? Even
I think they played at like the Ballet Hall, but generally they would play at the UT basketball stadium, which the name escapes me right now.
Yeah.
Sorry, but we're driving on the road, and there was a rogue puppy on the road. Everybody's trying to catch it. Yeah, everybody's trying to catch it. It's a very cute dog. No one wants to be a dog murderer tonight.
No,
very
I have a rogue cat in my apartment. I came home yesterday, and there's a black cat in my apartment. And my wife was like, wasn't even home, but it was somebody's cat we're watching now, I guess. These animals just appear.
Dude, animals and animal interaction is like one of the weirdest things. Like, I wanna keep this story going. The dog escaped from some people who are now fighting on the side of the road. This is Denver, Colorado, play-by-play, as brought to you by.
is somebody in the car live tweeting this, I hope?
Have you tweeted this yet, Josh? You should live tweet this. This has to, we need to get on all social media. Hootsuite this, man. Just put it on everything.
Because you have your Facebook hooked up to your Tumblr and your Twitter, and you're on the air now, and I'm also live tweeting this conversation. This interview is on my side of the interview is being recorded. Not only audio that you listen to now, but the video is also being recorded, and that's being dumped into a live stream somewhere. I'm not going to say where.
Incredible.
So we're covering a lot of bases here.
Hell yeah! That was maybe one of the more fantastic internet moments. You know, I don't know if anything's ever been going at that school. Probably has. I'm probably too much credit. But that was a great internet moment. Shout out.
Speaking
to
of great internet moments, read some more poems, man.
Yeah, you got it. Hey, let me grab this book again. Let's see. 32. Disconnected from this body, my mind is a kite, soaring above the power lines lost in the night. I found myself in the canned food aisle. The only desire I wanted to feel was love. But she was a few states away, so I strolled, constructing this poem. Thinking about how strange this has all become. Spent most of these nights wide awake, trying my very best to smoke this brain all up. I read the poetry I write like a collapsed lung. Live the poetry that is life, like it was the most beautiful song grown by the sun. Smug up on the thoughts of us, these studies in the red, whites, and blues I hum. As the planes and trains bring me an inch closer to youth, you are the song of this country, my love.
Nice.
Here, yeah. Let's see. I don't want to get any emo poems in here tonight.
Yeah. You don't want your friend in the car to, like, you know, start.
Yeah, I don't want Josh to start bawling. That's like. Yeah. I mean, we almost saw a dog get hit reading sad poetry. That's not good for the driver. That's super dangerous. All right, this is number 11. If I could have one wish, it would be to live life 1,000,000 times so I could fall in love and die with you each and every time. Poetry.
That is poetry. How's the driver feel? Is he starving now?
Josh is crying right now. Yeah. I'm trying to console him. He just pulled over. Yeah, we need
Josh,
to get some naps.
Josh, it's going to be okay. Josh, was just a fucking poem, man. It's all good. You have smelling salts in the car? Like, put them under the
table,
it's good.
We luckily just pulled up to my house. I think I have some. I'm a hippie. I have smelling salts inside, so that's gonna happen.
Hey, I just read. I've been reading. You have a manuscript floating around. Can we talk a little bit about the stuff you have going on now with the new collection you're working on?
This one's weird. Take it easy, guys. It is a lot of old stuff. Like a lot of like the first poem I ever got published by was by Red Fez, and the first poem in it, I've always loved that poem a lot. Like. And I've never had it really published, I don't think, outside of Red Fed. So I wanted to put it in a book, and that kind of, like, turned the whole thing around for me. And I just kind of went from there and just started doing things, just started making as many, I don't know, just, sorry, I'm kind of flustered at the second. I'm going to settle down. I just started writing, and I just started seeing what other stuff that I had never gotten published that I wanted to get published.
Yeah.
And it was just like one of those things where I talked to a few people about it, and none of them were really into it because it was all kind of really rough at that point. But
yeah.
I decided to go with it, so I'm just kind of, I'm going to do it myself, I guess, and just see kind of how that works out, just because, why not, you know?
Yeah, there's like, the strange thing about self-publishing is, you know, it always existed, you know, since the beginning of writing, so whatever.
Yeah, definitely, exactly. That's kind of how I felt about it. It's like, you know, if you're going to make something and you love making something, like, there shouldn't ever be any point where you're afraid of making it or afraid of failing with it because you wanted to make that, you know? And, like, I don't give a shit if anybody buys this book. I want to have a copy of it because I want to have a copy of it, you know? Like, and it's, I don't know, I've always made net art, and I have a lot of friends who make net art, which is just, you know, stupid, silly copy and paste Photoshop shit. And I just want to, I want to, like, have an homage to the internet in a lot of ways, like, because I love it, and it's helped me in so many ways that I can't even describe. I don't want to make a book for it, because that doesn't even make sense, you know? Like, why would you make a physical copy for something that isn't physically there? But it is, you know, in a lot of ways, so... I don't know, maybe I'm crazy as shit, but...
Well, I don't know.
YOLO.
I'm not sure.
That's kind of how I feel.
I think you're okay.
You got to roll with your feelings, you know? Just be like... And, you know, I think you... The best advice I ever got on writing was from you whenever I was visiting with you last year in New York. You're like, man, just fucking write, you know? Like, don't think about writing, just write. And that's kind of what I've done. And it kind of gets to that point where you, like, kind of get burned out with writing, and then you're like, oh, man, I can go back and edit all this.
Well, that's the other thing. I feel a lot of times something happens with writers where, like, I'll meet somebody who's, talent has nothing to do with it. You know, the most talented writers, the most talented artists, if they make one beautiful thing in their whole life, that's fantastic. But that's just not me. You know, that's not the artist that I really look up to. I look up to the people just making stuff, you know. And like you just said, man, you can never run out of stuff to do. It's like there's always something to do. I've worked a lot of manual labor jobs early on, you know, and it's like, if you're standing around with nothing to do, it's just because you want to. It's not because there's not something to do, you know.
Absolutely. I agree with that 100%. And, like, you know, I try to help out as many people's dreams as I can because that generally means reciprocation and they help me out with mine. And a lot of the times that's just really fun, too, and that's, I don't know. I think that's what it's kind of all what it's about, you know, at the end of the day. So, but, man, I really appreciate you having me on, too. It's been one of those crazy days again. And it's just fun to...
Man. Well, you made it home, it sounds like. You got this new puppy you found on the side of the road. Congratulations on that. What are you going to name it? What do you think? Grime Time Live? Is that going to be the name of the dog or what? Or maybe how about Studies 101?
Yeah, something like that. Maybe I don't know. Maybe just William Jr. Willie Jr. Little Willie.
Well, man, thanks.
Well, I don't know.
Thanks for coming on, man. I appreciate it. And
catch
up soon, right?
Anytime. Yes, we will definitely catch up soon, bud. Pleasure. Pleasure being on.
Pleasure. Yeah, that was a pleasure to talk to you. That was William Seward Bonney. And he is the author of the recently released poetry collection, Studies. And I'll tell you, it's a hell of a book. Next on the show, we have Gary Powell. Gary, are you there?
I'm here, man.
How you doing? What's going on?
I just got done with the Charlotte Writers Club that I belong to, and I came over here and I grabbed a glass of wine at my favorite local spot, and I'm talking to you.
Oh, you know what? You've inspired me. You've inspired me to go get a beer. Thank you for the inspiration. I'm walking to the refrigerator right now.
Good.
You post this earlier. I saw you post this earlier about the Charlotte Writers Club. And tell me a little bit more about that. Is it a roundtable thing? You guys all get together and critique each other or what?
It's really kind of cool. It's a 90-year-old group. I mean, we've had some pretty amazing writers come through here. I haven't been, believe it or not, I'm not that old. I haven't been with the group since the beginning. But that's not a good question to ask. I'm older than you.
You're probably going to live to be like 145.
That's what I'm aiming for. The Charlotte Writers Group has been around for like 90 to 100 years or something.
Yeah.
So they've had some really good writers. I think at one time Thomas Wolfe was actually passed through this writers club. That's pretty amazing. It's been intact. We probably have about 300 members total. We usually don't get that many at any given meeting. I'm one of the program co-chairs this year, so I kind of am setting up the program for next year and got some good writers coming in, including probably some people you do know, like Cliff Garstang is coming in. And we've got some interesting people. We've got a wide variety of interests in our group, and I head up one of the things we do is critique groups, and I head up the Flash Fiction critique group, and I really enjoy that. We've got a very dynamic group of writers in that group, so it's a lot of fun.
Do you find I seem to always wind up in these these circles on online. It's mostly where I mostly critique and stuff. These circles online where I'm just seeing the same styles of stuff a lot. I'm wondering what happens when you go down to South Carolina and you're meeting up with people doing that's where you're calling from, right? South Carolina?
North Carolina.
Well, I was close.
I'm sorry.
North Carolina.
Yeah.
What's the general barometer of style?
I don't think it's much different than what you might see, believe it or not, in New York. I mean,
cool.
We have, we've got within our group, we've got people who write science fiction. We've got people who write magical fiction. We've got a little bit absurdist stuff. I mean, we got a little bit of everything. I don't know that it's much different than what you get there. I mean, we probably don't have the quantity of writers we've got a little bit of everything. We're not out of the mainstream. We're a little backcountry, but we're not that bad.
Sure, yeah, rock on. So that's great. So that's cool. You have this outlet where you can get together, meet up in a group setting, and work on pieces and critique and all this stuff. I want to shift a little bit more to talk about your own writing and kind of some of the stuff that you got kicking around. You have a novel. Is it out right now? Is it forthcoming?
I have a novel, Lucky Bastard, and then I have a, I just, that was published by Main Street Rag Press. That's here, they're here in Charlotte, but they're a nationally known publisher. They publish short story collections and poetry and a few novels a year. Scott Douglas is the publisher. I just talked to him tonight. He was at our meeting. Lucky Bastard grew out of two short stories that I had previously published featuring two characters by the name of Harley Hopewell and Jimmy McClain. And their voices kind of came to me as I was working on some stuff, and they're kind of downhole boys down here in North Carolina, and I like those characters as a way to explore a lot of the change that we've had in North Carolina over the last few years. We have a terrific juxtaposition of cultures here. We have Latinos, Indians, rednecks. We've got it all, and we're all, you know, kind of compressed here. And I wanted to use those characters to explore the tensions within that juxtaposition, and that's kind of what I did. And I did that in my first two stories that I wrote about them, and those were published in literary journals, and one of them was a finalist for a prize. And I started to write a pardon me?
Was this the Glimmer Train short story, or was that
a No, that was another story. That was another prize. Those stories, I started to write a third story about Jimmy and Harley, and it turned out it was more than a story. It was a novel. And so there you go. And that became Lucky Bastard. And then this summer I decided to publish those two stories, which kind of make up a prequel to Lucky Bastard. Yeah. I put those together with a story that I just wrote this past summer and never been published before. I put those together as three stories, and I published those myself. I mean, the other two stories had already been published, and so I did those two stories myself, or those three stories myself, and that's kind of a prequel to Lucky Bastard.
Now, I'm intrigued by the idea that you're keeping writing about these two characters. I love when authors do that. I love when they keep that going. Do you have plans to continue to write about these guys?
Well,
I have.
I don't know. That's everybody asks me that, and
sure.
A lot of the people who have read the novel love the characters. And in fact, I met with a book club locally a week or so ago, and all the ladies just love Jimmy McClain. And I think that's great. I don't know if I'll write another story about Jimmy McClain or not. I'm working on another novel right now that doesn't really involve those characters at all. It's set in a whole different place and a different time. And so I don't know if they'll come back to those. If I do come back to the characters from Lucky Bastard, it'll probably be one of the minor characters. Well, she wasn't all that minor, but one of the minor characters, a character by the name of Jolene, a woman. And a lot of people love Jolene, too. And so I may come back to her, but I don't know if I have another Jimmy and Harley story in me. I've kind of moved past Jimmy and Harley, is how it feels to me.
Oh, yeah, understandable. It's interesting what you said about everybody loving Jolene. I haven't read the book. I'm always so behind on my reading. But I gotta say that any human named Jolene has always been loved by all of society. Jolene's around the world. My hats are off to all of you. You're all fantastic.
Well,
each and every Jolene out there. Props to you all.
One of my readers told me that that I have two women, female characters in the novel. One is younger. That's Jolene. She's a young, attractive blonde, and the other is Becky, who's a more mature woman, and everybody tells me, all the guys say that when Jolene's the kind of woman that you want to meet in your 20s, and Becky's the kind of woman you want to meet when you're a little older than that. So,
there's something to be said about appealing fictional characters and all that stuff. What are you working on now?
Well, I'm working on a new novel entitled Whole Life, and I usually have a couple of short stories going.
Yeah, right.
And I write a lot of flash fiction. You know, I try to write a piece of flash fiction every other week. I try to finalize a piece of flash fiction, and then I I have the other things going at the same time. For me, I know a lot of authors write one thing at a time. I kind of get up every morning. I've got several things going, and whichever one catches for me over that first cup of coffee, that's the one I kind of focus on that morning. And, you know, some days it's one thing, some days it's another.
Yeah, that's a great way to approach it. I wouldn't call myself a huge Bukowski devotee or anything. I like his work a lot. I don't have his like tattoo on my back or anything. But the thing I always admired about him was he's one of these guys doing what you're kind of doing. You know, you got the flash fiction thing going, you got the novels going, and he had poetry too. So he had short stories, novels, and poetry, and it was just if one wasn't working, he went to the other one. You know, and always had these different pools to swim around in. I like where I should do that kind of thing.
Each form, you know, offers its own challenges and its own rewards. And, you know, it takes a certain temperament to write a novel. I mean, but it also takes a certain skill and a certain temperament to write a flash fiction piece. And they, you know, I really think they kind of feed off of each other. But I like having the variation. It kind of keeps me alive.
Yeah. What kind of writers did you grow up and make you want to write? Who did you?
I'm an old guy, right? So I grew up reading, Hemingway and Kerouac and Ginsberg and I think the writers that probably have most influenced my writing are folks like Raymond Carver and Richard Ford and Tobias Wolff, folks like that. I mean, maybe once or twice a year I'll write a piece of magical realism, you know.
Yes.
But most of my stuff is. Is
grounded heavily in reality.
Yeah, it is, and that's where I'm more comfortable. My stories are character driven. I respect the other, other forms of writing and authors. But that's not where I come from. You know, I'm character driven. And those are the authors that I draw on. You know. So,
Well, that's awesome. It's a kind of a revelation to me. I never really separated the idea that because wacky stuff is happening and it's unexplainable that it affects the characters. But I think for a lot of people, you're really hitting it right on the head when you say that. It's kind of a comfort. It's a comfort to be wholly invested in reality. Maybe even more so when you're reading something written from the first person, you're not challenging your readers. Well, you are challenging them, but you're not challenging them with, can I trust this guy? Can I trust my narrator? Because what planet is this fucker even on? You know, that kind of thing.
Well, I think a first-person narrator, you never know if that narrator is reliable or not, right? But if it's grounded in, realism as opposed to magical realism, I suppose you trust the facts that the author's, offering up. So,
It's cool you mentioned Raymond Carver. I haven't read any of his work yet, but everybody recommends Raymond Carver to me. I look at his picture a lot. That's what keeps me from reading his book. He looks like a miserable son of a bitch. I'm looking at his the back of his book cover right now. He's frowning at me. His author photo on the back of what we talk about when we talk about love. The fucking guy is scowling at me. What's the, come on, Raymond, put on a fucking happy face, man.
He's a mystery. I think he was unhappy through a lot of his life, yet if you read his work, there's a tremendous amount of humor in his work. It's you know, kind of this dry, blue collar humor, but it's great stuff. I think he took great joy in his work. He certainly took great joy in drinking and having, you know, camaraderie with his buddies. I actually met Carver late in his life. I had purchased his novel, or not his novel, his short story collection, Cathedral, and he was reading at an art museum. I can't recall the name of it now. It's in Minneapolis, and I got a chance to go up there, and he signed. You know, one of the interesting things about him, he was this big man, and he had these huge hands, and he was awkward looking. You know, I don't know. He was, but he's. If you haven't read him, you should read him, man. I mean, he's the real deal.
Sorry, you know what I'm doing right now, Gary? I'm ripping the author photo off the back of the book. I just ripped it off, and now I feel comfortable. I'm gonna start this book tomorrow. And I'll let you know what I think.
I just wrote,
I'm opening up the inside cover. I just wrote big hands. This guy just has a little note to myself. The guy's got big hands. That's fantastic.
He's got big hands,
Big. So, you, man, you seem like you have a lot of fun with your writing and stuff. You got this roundtable thing going on in North Carolina and Charlotte. What's going on with are you kind of doing regular readings down there as like a monthly thing, more than that? What happens down there?
We do have the publisher that I published my novel with, Main Street Rag. They do a regular reading on the last Friday of the month, and we have different authors that come in, and I've read there. And every week you can, you know, if you're an author, you can go there and read. I don't go there every week. I mean, it's like 20 miles for me to drive into the city. I'm just kind of too lazy and old for that.
No, I understand. I can take the subway, you know, 20 minutes down and go to a reading almost every night of the week, and I go every 6 months. So
you got a lot more energy than I do. So. but I've enjoyed meeting with a couple of book clubs down here, and that's a lot of fun. And you know, so I enjoy that sort of stuff. I especially enjoy interacting with readers and talking with readers about my characters and that sort of thing. Yeah, I get a lot of fun out of that.
It's a lot of fun, you know, especially you know if you're. You have a community of friends and whatnot who seem to. It's interesting to me when you're talking about book clubs and people reading your books and stuff like this, and I'm wondering, my generation doesn't seem to do that so much with the book club and thing, and you know, a lot of our writing is online and stuff, and we don't get together. I know I don't get together locally with anybody to talk about books, but I am intrigued when I see that on like a light pole here in the city, and they have like the local book club that's meeting at the bar on like, you know, every second Sunday. But I'm always like, man, I don't want to read that book, you know. So maybe that's my problem. Whatever.
You know, it's kind of an old fashioned thing, I think.
Beautiful, though.
You know. But it's, you know, the people that do it and participate in it, they love books and they love reading. And, you know, I might not dig every book that they read, you know. I might not be into it, but I admire them for doing it, you know. I mean, what is it? It's only like, I saw a statistic, you probably saw it too, it's only like 12% of the entire country read a book in the last year or something. So, I mean, the fact that people are, you know, reading and talking about books and interest them, I don't care what venue they're doing it in, I think it's wonderful, you know?
Well, I'll tell you what, I always wish that people read more. Like, it's something I can say right now, but if I'm on an airplane and I'm sitting next to somebody who likes to read and I'm reading a book and they start asking me about them, I want to strangle them and take their dead body and put it in the airplane bathroom and pretend like we never met each other. I don't want to, you know, I just want to be left alone with my book, okay? I don't...
Yeah.
Can we practice, you know, in the air silence, okay? The captain has turned on the do not talk to Bud Smith light. Don't you see that?
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah, you got... Yeah, that's right.
Well, I tell you what, man, it's a real pleasure to talk to you tonight about your novel, Left the Bastard.
I'm honored. Yeah, I hope you read it. I hope you like it. I'm honored to be on your show. It's in my pile here.
It's in my pile, you know. I'm like chipping away at it. I always feel like a loser when I'm like, you know, I only read like 100 books this year or something. I just can't keep up, you know.
I'm trying.
I'm not a
fast reader, and I kind of vary my reading between what I think of as serious literature and fun stuff. I mean, like right now I'm reading a Carl Hiaasen novel. It's a lot of fun. But one of the books I read last year and enjoyed very much was your novel, Tollbooth, and I liked that quite a bit. I thought it was exuberant and just really well done. So
thanks, man. Thanks a lot, man. Learning as I go, you know. I be honest with you, a lot of times I've been humbled just clicking around to see all this great stuff that that people are putting out in our circle of like-minded people here. You know, you read this stuff, and believe me, I'm taking notes, man. I'm taking notes. All right. Well,
yeah, you do a great job. Thanks for doing this, man. I appreciate it.
It's fun. When you got something new coming out, make sure you send, you know, anybody listening to the show right now, if you got a new project coming out, something you're excited about, well, guess what? I'm excited about it, too. And not just because I'm on my second beer, okay? So, all right, man. Have yourself a great night, and I wish you all the luck in the world.
Hey, you too, man. Take care.
All right. So, bye. That's the show. That's what we got. Boy, I think it went fairly well, and I'm going to attribute that to the high quality of guests we had tonight. We missed one guest tonight. Something happened with Ben Zank, but I want to say, anybody who is a lover of photography, if you want to see some mind blowing photography, look up Ben Zank. Google his stuff. Check out his images. He is a crazy daredevil photographer. He's just doing some insane stunts, like going beneath frozen rivers and getting his photo taken, and just crawling into crazy like crevices and just doing insane stuff like that. Anyway, fantastic photographer. We didn't get the link up here on the show, but that's okay. Also, I want to thank the rest of the guests. Fan and Seguin for coming on, William Seward Bonney, Amber Sparks, and Gary Powell. It was a lot of fun to talk to you guys. I'm over here like a dumbass trying to play the music and the show. Look at that. Sometimes the internet and me are at odds. It's like a horrible game of tug and war. You're just flailing around and failing. But yeah, so that's the show. That's all we have this week. Hey man, it sure did run long. So next Tuesday, March 25th, Brian Ulau, Janice Lee, Robert Vaughn, and Jay DeSalvo on Bicycle Press. So that's going to be the show next Tuesday. I hope that you tune in. And that's going to close out March. I would say April looks pretty good, too. We're going to have a couple more shows in April, and then I think I'm going to go on hiatus for a while here for the summertime. But if you have some interesting projects that you're excited about, some stuff you'd like to promote, or just stuff you'd like to talk about, send me an email, okay? Or find me on Facebook, Bud Smith. I'm easy enough to find. There's probably only about 100,000 other Bud Smiths on Facebook, so just click on them all. Thanks for your time, and I hope you have a beautiful evening.